What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKeesick, and it's time for this week's review of the defense against the Patriots in that very demoralizing game. Joining me to do that is Spencer Peterson. Spencer, how are you doing?
Good overall, Ken. Going to the holidays is always nice, but less so on the Ravens front right now.
Yeah, just a double gut punch of a day. And to describe it a little bit, we're all working on the same timeline here. So there's a 425 game. We go to the Ravens game, so we're on the way to the Ravens game, and we're in the process of listening to the Lions mount a comeback against the Steelers. And I get to the garage, and the Lions are just getting the ball back. And so I'm kind of making my way towards the ballpark as that's occurring, and they get the ball down to the one-yard line with a tackle made, by the way, by Patrick Queen, extra kind of a knife in the gut thing there. But anyway, tackle made by Patrick Queen at the one-yard line. And then they have that series of penalties that keeps him out of the end zone. I guess it was a 10-yard penalty, a 5-yard penalty, and then an offensive pass interference penalty on a play after a play after a play. Pretty awful, kind of a terrible day. And then you follow that up, of course, with that very difficult Ravens loss. And the cherry on top, of course, is the injury to Lamar Jackson and the notion that there really is no other result from the day that mattered nearly as much as that. The loss of Lamar Jackson is the loss of the season for the Ravens.
Yeah, last I heard he was day-to-day, but hopefully, I don't know if you have something later than that, but if he can turn it back around, there's a sliver of a chance of hope for this season, but we shall see.
Yeah, I mean, they got to go and take care of business against Green Bay. In some ways, Green Bay's in as bad a position as the Ravens are. The Ravens and Green Bay both got screwed on the timing of this game, that it's going to be on Saturday, and that will, I believe, that eliminates the Lions if the Packers win that game. You can take a look, but they're like 9-5-1, and I think the Lions are 8-7, and that's who they're chasing. So once the Packers win to go 10-5-1, the Lions can't catch them.
Yeah, admittedly, Ken, after the Ravens game last night, I've not been interested in
tiebreakers.
I've lost interest in looking at playoff scenarios, and so I'm not up to date on the latest clinch scenarios there.
Well, it's only as it relates to the Ravens that I'm really interested either. I'm in the same position that normally I talk about the catharsis you go through watching film. I felt none of that today. It's just been a very long day of slogging through this stuff and not being very happy about things. But anyway, the Packers are in the same position, though, that the Ravens, you know, were in a position where the Steelers are going to get to play later and know whether or not they have to win or not. Okay. So you don't want that ever for your, you know, a team you're going to have to face certainly in week 18 at the very minimum. But the Packers by playing first basically will eliminate the Lions from any kind of contention. Where was I going with this? Yeah, the Lions will know if they're still in contention anywhere regarding the Packers. And forgetting where I was going with this. I'm missing
maybe something about how that affects the Ravens because the Browns will be playing the Steelers, but the Browns, that doesn't really change what they're playing for. So
no, it doesn't play with the, I believe the Browns are going to give it an honest effort. They hate the Steelers and Shadur wants to prove himself. There's a lot of things the Browns are still playing for in terms of individual things. I'm really not concerned about the Browns' effort level, even though they should be probably concerned about the draft pick they're going to end up with. It was something about the Lions that are the Lions playing anybody in week 18? Like maybe the Packers need to lose. Yeah, the Lions are playing the Bears. That's what it is. So since the Lions are playing the Bears on Sunday, then the Packers will have already basically disincented the Lions from winning the game by winning on Saturday, which screws the Packers. So they're in the same crappy position the Ravens are in terms of damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing.
Yeah, the one solace we have, and as I mentioned, the sliver of hope, you know, if the Ravens are to win that Green Bay game, is that Vegas actually seems to think, I think we've all, you know, there's sort of a fatalism of the season right now with the Steelers just needing to beat the Browns, but Vegas has the Steelers just as a 3.5-point favorite there. So it's in Cleveland, so they seem to think it's going to be a little bit closer than I think the foregone conclusion we've all chalked it up as.
That's an interesting money line proposition as opposed to the 3.5. But what I would say is that part of that, the fact that it's only 3.5, or part of the reason the money line might be lower than what you'd expect, is that they think there's a chance that the Ravens will lose already to the Packers and make the game irrelevant to the Steelers, which means they'll rest a lot of players. And I think that's probably true.
That's interesting. So there's some probabilistic baking in of that and the line will probably actually swing almost as if there had been injury news based on the result of that Ravens game.
Yeah, exactly. And they have some significant players. They probably would like to give a week off. Cameron Hayward is, 110 now? So he probably ought to take a week off. And TJ Watt is another player. He may not return this season anyway, but they're certainly not going to play him if they have a choice after they know on Saturday what's going on. So anyway, various things can still happen. The Packers don't really have that much to play for, because if they win, like I say, the Lions are disincented, and I think that they probably don't end up winning the division anyway. So they may be in even a position where they should be resting some starters on Saturday, just thinking, hey, you know, they can't rest because they need the Lions. They need to eliminate the Lions. So they can't rest themselves, but once they do that, they're probably not going to win the division because of it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Jordan Love, though, given that he's in concussion protocol. So that, regardless of any kind of sit, start, rest decision, that is something that is pending.
Yeah, that could possibly help the Ravens. So that's a little something. All right, all it will do is, you know, allow us to suspend our disbelief into Sunday, root for the Browns, then be let down for some, you know, Shadur shenanigans that might happen on Sunday.
Or the constant horseshoe the Steelers seem to have up there, week after week.
They are unbelievable in that regard in terms of what's happened this year for them. So anyway, Ravens defense, let's talk a little bit about it. They did generate 2 turnovers. That was something positive from the game. And after that, it's really hard to find the things that went well. They generated a little pressure in the game. I'm sure we're going to talk about that later. But surprising, despite the fact they had a lot of plays with pressure, they didn't have super effective pressure, or maybe more accurately said, May was just terrific dealing with the pressure and getting off pressure throws that were still completions for positive yardage and whatnot.
Yeah, there was some where just one or two that you just had to tip your cap to. I think we'll get into it in a little bit, but there's a couple things specifically that even when they did get pressure that bothered me with respect to either the scheme or the way the players were doing things that just allowed them to take advantage of the situation when what should have been favorable circumstances for the Ravens.
Yeah. And I mean, anytime you get a quarterback hit, nothing good should happen for the offense. Generally speaking, they had 5 consecutive quarterback hits at one point in this game. The 5 consecutive quarterback hit plays went incomplete. Okay. That's good. That's a reasonable quarterback hit thing. And then pass for six, pass for five, pass for nine to start the next drive with three quarterback hits. It's like, what the hell is going on here? I was at a loss in a lot of ways with what May did, but it was, you know, you tip your hat to him in a way. We got to talk about some of the activations for this game. The Ravens went with four defensive linemen. I would call the circumstances less than optimal to do so. New England is really known for playing a sixth offensive lineman on a lot of plays. They did that on this. They have an offense that moves the ball pretty well. They certainly did that, and they won snap count pretty dramatically. But then you think, maybe there's a player they really need to get onto the end of the game to take the place of that fifth defensive lineman. So they sat, interestingly enough, they brought up Josh Tupou from the practice squad. They sat CJ Okoye, who'd played a fair amount this year and has a fair number of defensive snaps. He hasn't been perfect by any sense, but you know, he does something along the line of scrimmage in terms of run defense. And then instead, as the fifth outside linebacker, they activated David Ajabo. David Ajabo was made a special teams captain for the game, so he walked out for the coin toss. So I don't know if you think that was visible on TV. I didn't notice if it was, but David Ajabo was out there, number 90, because he's the special teams captain today. I guess they told him he wasn't going to play on defense, and he didn't. He had zero defensive snaps.
Yeah, it's a little baffling, the decision there. And it's not even a guy who I think you could claim being, you know, a Harbaugh favorite or anything like that. He's been for years now, you know, a constant inactive or a guy that they're not forcing onto the field. It's a little mind blowing.
It is. He did have a special teams tackle in this game. I made kind of a little wink at the camera or whatever it was. And then, he didn't play a single snap defensively. In fact, the Ravens were having, for the first time all season, we'll talk about this a little bit, they were really having trouble finding time for Mike Green to be on the field. And they've been way overplaying Mike Green, but they apparently not the problem anywhere. Their cup runneth over at outside linebacker, such that they can afford an extra inactive there. All right. Let's see. So they relied on four defensive line. The Patriots played a lot of heavy formations. When they played these heavy formations, the Ravens got into jumbo a fair amount. So they used a fair amount of four defensive line formations in the game. I think it was five times in total. They had all four of their defensive linemen on the field. They played a lot of base as well. I think there were 15 total snaps between base and jumbo nickel and jumbo that they had three plus defensive linemen on the field. And then they had to play 71 snaps. So you can tell I'm pissed off about my old thing and just trying to stack up another pile of reasons why you never activate four defensive linemen for a game. In a way, they got away with it because, hey, they got through the game without an injury, and those guys weren't the central problem why they lost the game.
Yeah, it just does seem odd, though. It seems it's somewhat unusual to the point that it must be intentional. This is not just something that you kind of fall one way or the other as from a roster construction decision-making perspective. So I would really love if someone would ask Harbaugh, like, why they keep making that decision week after week after week. And maybe it gets interspersed at times with five, but this is something going back the last couple of seasons that's happened multiple times. So they are actively making that choice.
Yeah. I mean, they are actively making the choice. No two ways about it. I know they value special teams to a fairly high degree. You know, if you really look at it, Ajabo played 12 snaps in a typical game. Okoye has played more than that. Probably in the high teens, I would say, for Okoye has been pretty typical. He's had games where he's played more than that. It's a funny situation. Anyway, enough time on that. We're not going to spend that much time on the game in total, so we shouldn't spend that much time on the roster decisions. I thought a very tough game for Alohi Gilman. I thought he was one of the standout guys who was in position to perform and really didn't get it done in this game. In particular, I thought he was on the back end of some coverage brackets that seemed to be pretty good, or he had close coverage himself, and he couldn't do anything to find the football at the catch point.
No, very frustrating day for him, especially after last week, where I believe he was named either the AFC Defensive Player of the Week or whatever the right honor was. But, yeah, he was notable on the screen on television as a guy who was constantly maybe around the ball but not making the play.
Nice play on the right sidelines. Ball goes through his hands. He actually didn't get through his hands. It went off his hands for a PD, but it could have been interception. That was unfortunate. The very first one of the very first plays of the game was the third play, I think, was a 25-yard throw on the right sideline to Diggs, and it was over Wiggins, who had the underneath part of the bracket, but he was right there on the backside of the bracket. That's his play. I mean, I feel like Dan Dierdorf, that deep outside is, you know, that's his play. He's got to make that play, Raheem Moore. He was up in position to make that play. He could not knock it away from Diggs. Not expecting an interception. I'm just expecting incomplete there.
Yeah, the dropped potential pick earlier, that one doesn't bother me as much. You know, that interceptions is very much a shots on goal game where, you know, after the Marlin pick earlier in the game, then that one, it really felt like, you know, they're getting in the right position. They're not going to catch every single one. It's frustrating when the result is not good, but that's of his struggles on the day. That's one of my lower issues.
Yeah. Oh, that one could have helped him win the game. The Wiggins one could have won the game for him directly. If he'd come up with the ball.
Oh, to be clear, I would love for him to have picked it off. It's just, if we're rattling off evaluation of the player, he's not going to catch every single one. And, you know, some of the missed tackles and other things are a much bigger problem in my mind than, you know, jumping in front of the ball and not quite coming up with it.
I'm with you there. I'm with you there. Anyway, 6 targets, 83 yards allowed for Alohi Gilman. So tough game for him. And by the way, the Alohi Gilman, 83 yards on 6 targets. I used for that one, the PFF numbers. I probably would have assigned him the 25-yard target to Diggs, where Wiggins was underneath. PFF gave it to Wiggins. And frankly, I think that's probably not right. So it could have been 118 yards or 108 yards, I guess. Let's talk about one player who was terrific. We're going to have more to say about him later. But Travis Jones, I thought, had an outstanding game of pressure. He was in the backfield all night and in the cone all night. Very unusual game because the Patriots seemed to run away from him. Not directly at him, certainly. They hardly ran the ball between the tackles at all when he was in there. The one decent run they had between the tackles was a 21-yard run, I think. It came in Q4 for the touchdown. It was arguably between the tackles. But anyway, if you assume that was between the tackles, Travis Jones wasn't on the field for that play. Otherwise, they didn't run at all between the four times for 9 yards with Jones in the game between the tackles.
Yeah, he is not a guy resting on his laurels after the new deal that he got. He has stacked very good games since then. And just that signing continues to look better and better. And just in terms of what it does, we'll probably be shifting to future season outlook shortly and thinking about that rather than a deep playoff run, but we'll see. Don't want to close the book quite yet, but how good that deal is just makes me feel so much better about the Ravens offseason potential. It's hard to overstate.
Yeah, I agree. It's a great number that they've got him at. And I'm glad. I hope he's happy with the deal. And if he's not happy, maybe it's a way to sign him again after 2 years. And extend him for 3 more kind of thing. But that's what they basically did with Bateman. They extended his deal very early, and he's got a much longer deal. And that, you know, after this year, that may or may not look really good for the Ravens. But he certainly looked good at the time when he had that historic year last year.
Absolutely.
That's a historic year for the Ravens, folks. I'm not saying Rashad Bateman has historic year, but he had the highest touchdown percentage of any wide receiver in Ravens history, and he had the highest yards per target of any wide receiver in Ravens history. That's why it was historic. Let me just be clear. Not projecting him into being a number one or a 1A or any of that receiver that I don't even know the definition of. All right. Seemed like they did have an effective plan to generate pressure into this game. We're going to get into this a little bit later into the pass rush with some more detail. But two things happened with May. First of all, did a wonderful job of salvaging his opportunities when he was pressured. He got some short completions. He got a couple of better completions than that. They got a couple short completions as he's going down. But he also was absolutely deadly with ample time and space. And the Ravens gave up some of that too in this game.
Yeah, no, he had a very good game. As I alluded to before, there's some things, I don't know if it's schematically player execution that the Ravens do that just makes me rip my hair out at times. And this has been a problem basically it over the last several years at every point, but maybe the Martindale defense, where I never played football at any sort of high level, you know, beyond high school, but still, just even when the Ravens are getting pressure, it seems like they have the tendency to just let opposing wide receivers run completely free on the field without putting a hand on them, without rerouting them, without changing their timing at all, to the point that even when May is getting pressure, he can just hurl the ball to where he knows the receiver is going to be. And he's completely unbothered. It happened with Diggs multiple times, and it's very frustrating.
I thought Collinsworth made a very cogent point during the game. He said that one of the things he's seeing with Diggs is, with the things he's seeing with May that's different from what he's seen in the past, was that he's keeping his head up and looking down the field as he's trying to evade pressure and as he's stumbling around in the pocket trying to move around. It was a very good point. And you could definitely see it right there on the screen, is that, you know, in fact, there was a play where he actually got tripped by Van Noy on a pressure, and it was a quarter second, 2/10 of a second, maybe he already had his head back up and was looking down the field after he reset his foot there. It's just very impressive the way he does that. He probably is deserving of the MVP award this year. There's more candidates than just him with the big year Stafford is having and some others, but I think May is probably the guy right now who looks to be in very good shape to get it.
Yeah, no, he is impressive. I think there was a little bit of, I don't know if it's wish casting or hope, that the soft schedule or something was going to catch up to him and the Ravens might be able to treat him like they have treated rookie and second year quarterbacks in recent history, but that was not the case.
Yep, that is absolutely true. So snap battle, the Ravens lost again 71-54. You know, you look at the Ravens from an efficiency standpoint in this game, and there isn't anything that really sticks out at you about, hey, they didn't do that well. I mean, first of all, they didn't really turn the ball over. They had a turnover by Flowers, right? But they didn't have the interception. They didn't, the fumble by Flowers was the only one, right?
They had the Henry fumble.
No, Henry fumble, of course, the Henry fumble. Okay. So that was bad. They did end two drives with turnovers, but they ran the ball for 5.2 yards per carry. They went 16 of 20 passing the ball, which is going to make your passing results less skewed to outside. You know, I'm talking about less skewed to barbelled results. So they're, you know, between those two things, they should have been able to sustain some drives and do some things well. And they did. They were reasonable at converting on third down. They were over 500 for the game. Yeah, 7 of 11, 64% on third down. That will get it done most of the time. They just didn't have the ability to keep drives going all the way down the field as they need them to. And they with Tyler Huntley in there, as much as Tyler has been a real blessing to the Ravens this year. He the last couple of drives, the first one stalled out because he had to get rid of the ball too quickly, because the Patriots kind of figured out what the magic weakness of Tyler Huntley is, a complete lack of pocket presence.
Yeah, that showed up at least once or twice, of where it just did not look like he was aware of what was going on in the pocket and got T-boned by a oncoming traffic.
And then the last drive was really, frankly, knifed in the gut by the fact that number 7, Davis, diagnosed the most diagnosable screen pass you'll ever had. And they had guys who were set up to make a play on that. Linderbaum and Fa'alele had both sold out and were at the line of scrimmage, basically ready for that pass to be thrown out there. The Ravens had three blockers on the right side in front of Ali. But all it takes is one guy to figure it out, and you can't block him, because it will be offensive pass interference if you do. And he was in and made the tackle on Ali as soon as he caught the ball. Just very, very frustrating, some of what's going on here. There almost has to be some other thing that you're selling on that play. Like maybe the guy on the outside does a little comeback route as part of this. And, you know, you show that cornerback something that doesn't allow him to come downhill on the running back. But I'm not sure exactly what schematically would have made it easier to do than that. But I do know that didn't work. What happened there?
It seems like the Ravens have had a little bit of difficulty with that. I don't know if they're tipping somehow or what exactly is happening, but when we did the, and this is getting into offense and not defense, but when we did the Jets show, there was two screens that had, I think, Johnson, the outside linebacker for the Jets, sniffed out immediately and was just in the running back's hip pocket when the ball was supposed to get, Likely's hip pocket when he was supposed to be getting a tight end screen. But it just seems like the Ravens have had trouble with any sort of misdirection and have had folks sniffing that out constantly.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets, that's Jermaine Johnson we're talking Jermaine about, Johnson. Number 11. And you know, it was, I kind of forgotten that, but you bring it up and it's absolutely, you got a visual memory of those plays that's still there. It's very frustrating, very frustrating. Ravens are still, after losing the snap battle in this game, 71-54, they're just 4 of 15 games have they had 60 plus snaps. It just that number is so mind boggling to me and so un-Ravens like. I can't get through with it. I think there's something that's frustrating about the Ravens fan base too that I want to point out here. Lamar Jackson is not to blame for what has happened this year, meaning it's not his fault that any of what's happened has happened, but it is Lamar Jackson being hurt that has really destroyed the Ravens offense. They've played good football with Lamar Jackson running around behind a crappy offensive line before. So that hasn't really been the problem. And it's largely the same offensive line as it was last year. And you can say, well, he's playing better. I mean, you know, and McCary was, you know, Babe Ruth, and Voorhees is Tim Hewlett or something. I mean, you know, it was some bad Oriole work we're going to compare him to. It's really not the case. I mean, there's just some difference between those two. And I'd say, you know, it's not insignificant. But you got, you know, maybe Rosengarten playing at a slightly higher level. You probably have Linderbaum maybe playing at about the same level, I'd say. Stanley has come on in recent weeks. I mean, I just look at these two units and I'm saying, okay, there's a difference there. It's not that much of a difference. And then look at the wide receivers, and they're better than they've ever been before. Having Hopkins is a big improvement over last year. Having Aguilar as a number three or others as a number three. You might have considered there. Wallace had some, you know, made some plays and whatnot. They have, you know, Tez Walker as a number four receiver is excellent this year, probably better than Wallace was last year as a number four or five receiver. They have more weapons. They have more the weapons across the backfield, I'd say, are good. I think I'd rather have Ali and Mitchell than Hill alone is what I would say about the running back situation. Agreed on all that?
Yeah. Right. Hard to disagree with any of it.
So I come back to the big difference from the Ravens, or the reason why they're, you know, more than 100 points worse in terms of point differential than they were last year. The biggest single factor is the health of Lamar Jackson. Please understand, I'm not blaming Lamar Jackson for this. I'm bemoaning our lousy situation. And I'm not saying none of it is on the coaches. And I'm not saying none of it is on an offensive coordinator. I'm not saying none of it's on the offensive line coach. I'm not saying, you know, that there aren't changes that probably need to be made this offseason in the coaching ranks. I am saying that the biggest single reason the Ravens are not as good is that Lamar Jackson has not played as well, which is a function of the injury. Injuries.
Yeah, I think there's been quite the and whether it's the same injury that's being reported differently, the injury report has had basically every lower body part that you can point to on an injury report as over the last several weeks.
Yeah. And that's for sure true. Now we have very good visual evidence that the back injury is something new. Mm-hmm. And it does not bode well for the rest of the season. Obviously the leading hope as Ravens fans were going to be that the Ravens cut the double in yesterday's. They hit the exacta basically on the Pittsburgh Detroit game, and then the Patriots would come here and the Ravens would beat them, and then they'd have gotten a week off for Jackson, you know, hopefully get well. And it's absolutely, there's no one more important in that building than Lamar Jackson. And if they can't find a way to get him right, they still have to work through it as best they can. But you know, the biggest single reason that the Ravens are not as good as the 2023 or 24 Ravens is the difference in play of Lamar Jackson and the injury related difference in play, not something he's doing stupid, not something he's doing because he's become lazy or anything like that. I don't believe any of that crap. I don't believe for one second he ever like sat down on this team because of his injuries.
No, I think any fleeting thought that was the case or suggestion that was the case, I think should have been expelled or extinguished by what we've seen over the last several weeks.
Yeah.
He's clearly trying to get out there. He's not a guy who's quit on his team. I mean, even last night after he was in the locker room, he could have stayed in the locker room, but he was out on the sideline with his teammates, cheering them on. It does not strike me at all as a guy who's quit on the team.
Yeah. I'm with you for sure there. So anyway, in the end, the Ravens lose control of their own destiny. They don't have that to win the AFC North anyway. They have to get help now. And that's not a comfortable feeling. It has happened before that they've had to win and get help on the final week of the season. They did that to get into the playoffs in 2014. They thought they had lost an absolutely backbreaking game at Houston. If you remember that game that they lost, I don't know, 22-17 or something. It was a kind of a low scoring, nasty loss towards the end of the Flacco era in 2014. And then they, the next week, I believe, or maybe the last week of the season anyway, the Chargers knocked out, might have been the Chiefs that year. I'm not sure who it was in 2014 was the team that they beat in the final week of the season. And the Ravens won at home to finish off. Might have been the Chargers lost. Actually, now that I think about it, I'm not sure if Philip Rivers might have been out that year because of it. But anyway, it has happened once before. They've had lots of other times where they've hoped it would happen, and they've either lost themselves to not get it done, or somebody else has lost for them to not get it to not allow it to happen. But anyway, bad place to be.
We will find ourselves in the odd situation of being Shedeur Sanders and Cleveland Browns fans for a week.
It won't be hard. Won't be hard. And I'll convert very easily because you're still rooting against the Steelers. That's the fun of it.
Yeah, and in some ways, I think we talked about this a long time ago about what is sort of the best for the Ravens to happen with Cleveland. And I think the best situation for the Ravens in terms of Cleveland's long-term future is them thinking they might have something in Shedeur, winning a couple games, but it not being a slam dunk and him not necessarily being a franchise quarterback, sort of hitting that middle ground of maybe one or two wins down the stretch. They think they might have something. It dramatically weakens their draft capital position. Don't necessarily have the easy ability to pull the trigger on a franchise quarterback, whether or not you believe one is in this draft, but that could be the ideal situation for the Ravens.
There are people who say, draft all the other positions you need, get your house in order at a bunch of other positions before you draft your quarterback. And it's not a terrible plan for the Browns. The problem is that they may find themselves in a real morass if, first of all, Sanders has played kind of well enough that he probably is going to be an annoyance to them no matter what in terms of things. So in the best case, he's not a terrible quarterback, and he plays a few years with the Browns. I don't really think he's ever going to be great, but we'll see. You know, I may be undershooting the ceiling for him in a way that's not fair, but I don't really believe he's ever going to be great. I think we've seen a lot of reasons to believe.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair. Every style, every home.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This is Michael Rosenbaum. Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober. Or get pulled over, paid for by NHTSA.
Believe that that might not be true. His pocket presence is still not very good, and so that's a big negative, and it will take real training to make that be anything different than what it is. But I agree with you. There's a certain bullseye there that they Browns could hit that could really kill their franchise in terms of believing they have something with Shadur, not drafting a quarterback, maybe drafting some other players. Worse for the Browns' position would be signing some other players that they don't have the money for and mortgaging their future more. But if Mendoza is the guy, for instance, in this draft that the Jets go after, let's say, the Browns can't compete with their draft capital anyway. So the Jets have all those number one picks they got for Sauce Gardner and for others. I mean, they're too far ahead in terms of total JJ points available for sale. To not be able to get the number one pick if they wanted it.
Yeah, not to take us too far afield here, but you know, you look at the Cowboys being eliminated from the playoffs and the picks they sent for Quinnen Williams, and that was a deal a lot of Ravens fans were pounding the table that we should have made, and who cares about the picks and just make it happen. This is a, you know, star player, and you could very well be in that situation where you traded for 1 year of Quinnen Williams for a second and a first, and you have nothing to show for it this year.
That's right. And obviously, the Ravens under no situation would have made that move. But even the Micah Parsons move before the season would have been a disaster for this organization. I mean, if you this exactly what can happen did happen in terms of you get a player who gets injured, and all of a sudden you've traded two number ones, and the Packers are going to make the playoffs, but they'll be a much less dangerous playoff team without Parsons, and it's not the situation you want. The Ravens probably wouldn't have made the playoffs even if they had Parsons, frankly, you know, from the position they're in right now. All right, let's talk about some other general things. An interesting human interest story here more than anything, but William Kwenku was activated for his first NFL game. He is 1 month short of his 29th birthday. Okay, a Cameroonian player. He was on the field for one defensive snap, and all I can say is they don't all start like Jameel McClain. Jameel McClain in 2008, his first NFL snap, had a safety tackling Jamarcus Russell in the end zone. 2025, 17 years later, William Kwenku is the only defender on the offensive right side of the field, forced with a choice either to rush May or drop in back into coverage of the tight end who's wide open in the right side of the end zone. A totally non-win situation. Kobayashi Maru situation, right? Obviously, scenario he can't win. Anyway, he went after May, and May threw the easy touchdown pass.
And interestingly enough, played two more special team snaps than our must-activation David Ojabo.
Yeah, there you go. I think they wanted him. There's another player on the field that I didn't recognize his number. I thought it was Kwenku. It was number 48, but it's Carl Jones, who was active, I believe, a week ago. And so I probably should know his number by now, but I did not know. I saw him on the field. 48. Who's that? Patrick Owosso. Did he re-sign with this team? All right. We talked about Josh Tupou, so we don't need to go back into that again. The Ravens did an okay job stopping the run in this game, but a lot of their 3.4 yards per carry is really a function of the kneels that the Patriots took for what, 3 for -7 or 3 for -6 it was. So they end up with they gave up 4.3 yards a carry, which is not terrible. I still wish they would have had the extra defensive linemen for the game, but it's not terrible against a team like the Patriots.
Yeah, and we don't have to talk too much about Tupou, but I am a little surprised Okoye wasn't activated. What we've seen from him this season, plus what we were able to see from him in the preseason, when you're having trouble with the pass rush, it just seems like a guy you could unleash a little bit. And just, he's so physically imposing that, I'm not saying just forget all your lanes or forget all your assignments or anything like that, but you would have to think there's something they could get out of a guy like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And Travis Jones had all those pressures in this game that we'll undoubtedly talk about later. He was in a lot of them. He was in there with Tupou getting pressures. He had a 4-play streak where he got 3 pressures, and he played all of those with Josh Tupou, for example. So what's happening there frequently is Tupou is drawing the double team because he's between the center and the guard. And that gave a one-man opportunity for Jones, which was some of it, or they used Jones on a stunt somehow because they knew they could take advantage of that situation. Thrilled with Jones, but he has help on that field in terms of schematically helping him get to the quarterback, which is a plus thing. I thought Tupou actually played pretty well in this game. All right, who else do we want to talk about here? I guess part of the story in this game is that the Ravens didn't really have any answer for Diggs, Williams, Hollins, and Henry. So if you stop the run game, fantastic. But if you don't have answers for any of the wide receivers, and May can really go to any of them I wouldn't say equal likelihood or whatever, but he can hit any of them. And 3 of these 4 guys had, I think, at least 7 targets, or at least 6 targets in the game. So it wasn't like, you know, he wasn't spreading the ball at all around at all, and it was all going through Diggs. It was multiple guys who had big games.
Yeah, and maybe it in part is because the Ravens were a little shorthanded at corner. But, and again, this isn't the first time this has happened. It did seem like they were just letting these guys run free a little bit, whether that's fear of being beaten over the top or you know, Humphrey being limited by the groin or whatever ailments are hindering him, his play. Just not a good situation, and they seem not to have an answer for those guys.
They're very effective at doing some of the things underneath, like slanting and whatnot, where there's no real answer for it. May also made some throws in the game. Prince, the big one to Williams, number 18, corner of the end zone. It was right by the pylon. I mean, the throw was absolutely indefensible. I mean, and Humphrey was right on top of him. He was right on top of him. The ball was thrown outside shoulder, just, you know, literally 2.5 feet probably from where Humphrey can get it, but perfectly in range for the receiver.
And even then, the receiver made a great play on it to contort his body while keeping in bounds. And when I saw that, it almost looked like a rainbow pass from May up the sideline. I thought Humphrey was in perfect position to obstruct that or even pick it off. And it was just an amazing ball placement.
Yeah. And I mean, it's similar on the throw to Booty. That, you know, basically it should have been flagged for pass interference. He basically tackled Booty before the ball got there. Then Booty had trouble collecting the ball. He slapped it out of his hands on the ground and looked up like there's nothing wrong. I think he was looking all around for the flag, actually. And they hadn't thrown one, and then they reviewed, and they can't throw a flag late like that. So all they could do was say the catch was not completed.
Yeah. I would be very annoyed as a New England fan that was not flagged as pass interference. At the same time, there's a bit of it could be a bit maddening with the inconsistency of flags at times. When there was the play earlier in the game where May was getting chased all around the pocket, the play seemingly went on forever, and I believe it would have gone to fourth down. You know, it would have been fourth and long. They would have punted away the ball, but there was a very questionable, and I think Collinsworth even said, I don't know about that, on the, I believe it was against Humphrey, a illegal contact or a defensive hold against Diggs. That was very ticky-tack, but I understand it's not the same exact flag. Maybe it's not even the same official, but those are the kinds of inconsistencies that can be incredibly maddening watching a football game.
You wish there could be something more taken out of that. Like the baseball is finally going to do the right thing, whether or not they have any regrets about it next year in terms of going to automated ball strike calls. Maybe someone out there can tell me, but I think it's they're not going to every pitch call, but there's going to be a replay assist where you can check on it. I think it's going to greatly improve things, and I think probably Major League Baseball is headed to a situation where just every ball and strike will be called, where the umpire is the backup in case of mechanical or computer failure or whatever it might be.
Yeah, and I've heard proposals before of having some sort of like heads-up display or something like that for the umpire, that basically the pitch tracker is telling you what the call is. and they are there, again, for blatant issues, you know, clear errors that are coming up from some sort of reading or, you know, technical glitch or whatever it may be, that they have the opportunity to override it. But there's a strong suggestion that this is the call.
Right. That sounds like the way to me. All right, let's talk about some of the other things. We're going to talk about packages. We'll take very little time on this. Just to give you an idea, they played very heavy, and part of it was that the Patriots played very heavy. 5 jumbos, 8 base. They played 2 jumbo nickel, which they hadn't played in a long time. So jumbo nickel, for those of you who don't remember, because it has been a long time, is 3 defensive linemen, 2 outside linebackers. You're playing a 5-man front, but only 1 inside linebacker instead of the normal 2, so that you can stay in a nickel package otherwise. So it's kind of an in-between response to 11 personnel that you want to kind of spread the line of scrimmage. You got to have safeties who know how to run fit in that situation. The Ravens fortunately have that with a guy at slot corner, and Starks is not bad either, but you have a couple guys who can help you out in that regard. But anyway, that made 15 snaps they played with 3 defensive linemen on the field. They played big nickel 31 times. Those didn't go as well this week, 6.9 yards per play. Of course, a lot of things didn't go as well, but that was above the Patriots' average yards per play for the game of 6.3. And then they played 20 dime snaps, and this is where it kind of really fell apart for the Ravens. You'd think when you're in dime and the other team obviously is forced to pass, you know they're forced to pass, and in fact, they passed 20 out of 20 dime snaps. They didn't even have a quarterback scramble in there. Okay. They threw for 169 yards against the Ravens dime. That's really bad. And going back to your point earlier, Spencer, about, you know, they let some receivers run free. I think what I tend to associate that with is, oh, you mean they played a lot of zone defense? Because zone defense, you do allow players to kind of run free between zones, which does create opportunities and windows and places where tight ends and wide receivers can find grass, sit down, and have an easy pitch and catch reception, whereas man coverage doesn't really allow for that. It does. You can lose people in man coverage and be 10 yards behind him, but you could trip, but you typically won't be beaten by as much as you can beat by in zone.
Understood. When I say run free, I'm not implying that people should be following everyone around the field, you know, running man defense. It's more in the 5-yard bump area that you have.
Right.
Putting a hand on someone, obstructing their path, not letting that timing be so synced up that I know this guy will be on the hash at, you know, the 5 count in my head or whatever it is, that I can just throw the ball there and he's going to be there.
Right. Okay. That's good clarification there. That's good value. And I would say the Ravens and their willingness to press is pretty limited to obvious third and medium kind of situations where they want to get you off the field with it. Defenses, you know, still to this day, we've talked about this a little bit in terms of the value of variance accruing to the defense, you know, on past shows. And it's something I don't think football fans completely like buy into. They go, oh, you got to play it safe. You got to do this. Defenses, it's so hard to get a team stopped on 4-down football in particular, not necessarily 3-down as hard, but so hard to stop teams on 4 downs. When you're playing 4-down football, you better be taking all sorts of risks to try and get the other team off the field. With 3-down football, it's a little different. And there, teams really concentrate their willingness to take risk into that 3rd down play and how much they're willing to press on that play. And otherwise, you know, there's a distinct distaste for lining up in press man against a player you're going to have to try and cover on an island.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And you would expect that you're going to get some number of unforced errors that, you know, set up that third and X situation to be one where you can make that bet for variance. And you would imagine that with a sufficient long enough field to go, if you get a couple of those situations, you just need to win one to get the other team off the field.
Yep.
So fully buy that. And I think almost the opposite end of the spectrum, or the complete antithesis of, or I don't know the exact way to frame it up, but when you look back at that Detroit game early in the year, that seemed like a game of perfect consistency on the part of the defense to not, at least early in the game, to not get beat deep or to not give much up, but to consistently give up 4 to 5 yards per play every single time. You know, you didn't break, you didn't let the big play happen, but you know, 4 to 5 yards per play with zero variance is not a recipe for success as a defense.
Yeah, it isn't. And they are manufacturing lots of third and two, particularly if you're a team like Detroit, you're perfectly happy to play that game because you're going for it on fourth down and one from anywhere on the field, anywhere. So you shouldn't have that fear to go with it. But it definitely differs by coach. The prevalence of four down football that's being played across the NFL, that, you know, with Campbell, Vrabel, you know, went for it three times in this game on fourth down. The various teams that will go for it multiple times per game on fourth down really puts a lot of additional stress on defenses. And, you know, frankly, the Ravens have not been a team that went for it as often on fourth down this year as I would have hoped. This is an interesting point on the offense. What did you think their plan was going to the line of scrimmage on that fourth and four? Did you think they're trying to draw them off sides and then they're going to punt the ball? Or did you think that they were really going to run a play?
I wasn't definitive either way. I was probably 60% convinced they were going to try to run a play.
Try and explain to me why running a play in that situation, and I'm not saying this, I don't agree, because I think I do, why trying to run a play in that situation would have been a good reason. Because there's like a 10-point consideration why it's a good reason, then there's another 3-point consideration why it's a good reason.
I need to refresh myself in the exact game script scenario, but
5 minutes to go, fourth and four.
Just the value of keeping possession there is so high that there's a couple of reasons. One, the value of keeping possession. Two, the kind of redraw value of shorter fields to not run out the clock is
perfect. Both reasons. Perfect. Both reasons. We are working with an outline of things we want to talk about today, but that's not even on the outline. And you got it exactly.
Yeah. That was why I needed to refresh my memory real quick on exactly what the situation was, but yes, because again, giving them the ball back, just the value of possession is so high and I think continues to be undervalued. But and then also just the ability to run out the clock going the other way, especially with 5 minutes, 30 is almost the perfect amount of time to say, you know, 4 minute football, running out the clock, you can only get so many first downs, you have your complement of timeouts, all of that stuff. And often people are not going to get exactly 10.1 yards to get their first down. So,
yeah. And Tyler Huntley, you know, with 2 minutes to go, is not nearly as dangerous as a lot of other quarterbacks either. So you're in a bad situation, obviously, if you need more than that. What it really meant was that the 2-point conversion they had earlier in the game ended up being an enormous play.
Oh, that was huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Could have been a 5-point game. Otherwise, you know, then they would have had to make another 2-point conversion the second time to go up by 3 even.
Yeah. As was the missed field goal, but you know, 56 yards, hard to, you know, that's not a gimme. So,
No, that's true. That was unfortunate. And that gave away some good field position there too. But let's talk about the pass rush a little bit. Talk about ample time and space, ball out quick and pressure, 3 categories. I spoke about this a little bit before, but they had 16 ample time and space opportunities they gave away, which were 34% of the plays. That's about 5 points more than I would say is average in this day and age. The bad thing was May threw 204 yards on those plays, 12.8 yards per play, exceeded expectation by 68 yards just on that subset of passes.
Yeah. Ample Time and Space is one where I think there's almost a, when I hear you talk about this and the expectation level, there's sort of an unbounded upper end of what you can see, just given that is how a lot of the really big plays happen. And, you know, we saw some very healthy 20 plus type plays from May in this game, which, you know, pulls that average way up. They had some success, as you mentioned, I think at the top of the show. There were times when they were able to get to May. There are times they were able to hit May, and they weren't able to make the most of those situations. But there are absolutely, there were some times where they could not get to him and just looked like they had no answer. And I think that's where these ATS opportunities fall in terms of how I would characterize them.
Yeah, they stacked up a bunch of ATS early in the game, in particular on the second drive where they scored their touchdown. They had four of them. The next drive, they had a couple, had one on the first drive. I'm trying to figure out where they had more of them. They had three on one of their touchdown drives in quarter four, the one that ended in the run. So, you know, they were a little spread out, but they had more in the first half. It's just a, you know, giving May time to throw ended up being really difficult. And the Ravens didn't have a really good way of generating anything that would be a high chance to get a quick pressure on him. So that was frustrating. They got the ball out quick. May got the ball out quick 11 times. That's really not that much. 23% of the time, it'd be a lot less than a Rodgers or a Burrow would have ball out quick in a typical game. Threw for 55 yards on those plays, 5.0 yards per play. It's actually below expectation. He should get about six. Small sample size. I'm not saying there's any significance to this, but it's 11 yards below expectation, contributed to his overall pool. And then they had 20 pressures in the game. Now, first of all, 20 pressures and 16 ATS. If you've been following the defensive articles all year, you know there haven't been that many times where the Ravens really had a healthy pressure to ATS relationship like that. They've had oftentimes fewer pressures than ATS this year. But 43% pressure is pretty good. Bad part about it was he still threw for 115 yards on those plays. He should throw for about 3.5 yards per play on those. He actually threw for 5.8. There were three sacks. There were two turnovers. It's not like the Ravens got nothing out of them, but they were 45 yards above expectation on those and 102 yards over expectation in total, which is still, even with his enormous number of pass plays, 2.2 yards per play above expectation.
On the pressures, in terms of the distribution of that 45 yards above expectation,
yeah,
I don't know off the top of my head. Are there any, and it's hard to have just one play that would account for this. I don't recall any, you know, 80 yard pitch and catch and runs that could have skewed the results here, but are there any outliers that are potentially pulling that way up, or is it a series of just gashing for, you know, 15 yards, 20 yards that is pulling that up?
That's a good question. So let's look at the pressure plays here. So I'll just read them off from my score sheet directly. So the pressure results were sack minus one, interception. We're doing okay so far.
Great start.
Pass right for 26, pass right for six, sack for minus three, no problem. Incomplete, no problem. Incomplete, pass for 11, sack fumble for minus two. First half looked pretty damn good, honestly, I'd say. Then the second half, they got a pass for 13, pass for 23, incomplete, incomplete. Pass for six, pass for five, pass for nine.
And that was the run of three back to back to back, yeah, I think, right?
Yeah. That's four consecutive pressures actually there. And then they had a pass for nine again, an incomplete, a pass for eight, and that's it.
Okay, so there's not some, you know, one play where he evaded the rush and then flicked the ball out and someone ran for 60 yards that's pulling that way up, because sometimes you see that where actually quite good pressure results and then one kind of fluky play or – you know, evaded sack ends up being the difference.
The one that had a chance to be that was the play that Humphrey got the PD against Booty, where mm-hmm. it should have been a 50-yard pass interference penalty or maybe a 50-yard completion if Humphrey hadn't initiated the tackle on time or early, let's say. But it could have been the true sense of this is it could have been worse than this.
Yes. So that was one that was just a nondescript incomplete when you were
that's,
looking
that's off one of the incompletes ever. Incomplete. What are you talking about? Pass for pass by Humphrey. yeah, but it was one of those. I didn't mention it specifically there. So they did not use a whole bunch of more than five man pressure. They used 13 rushes of five plus, 28%. It's probably pretty typical. 4.4 rushers per play. They were down towards the goal line a couple of times, and you had an 8-man rush and a 9-man rush, which you don't see very often. The 9-man rush happened on that play where Kwenku was left hanging out to dry. Yeah, a pass right for 1 yard. They came in with their super heavy formation. Kyrus Tonga was in the backfield, lined up as a fullback. He's number 95, a defensive lineman, just so you know who he is. And then they've sold that play very well as a run left. The entire Ravens defense collapsed to fill the gaps against Tonga and the fullback they had in the game. And then, of course, he rolls out right opposite that, and Kwenku is left alone with the unwinnable decision.
Yeah, no, that's a tough one from the defensive perspective of down there at the 1 yard line. Got a big guy. Do you crash to stop the run? And then, like you said, left out in kind of no man's land and with a impossible decision to make.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's unfortunate because I don't know how many more plays William Kwenku is going to play in the NFL on defense in particular. There is not a 0% chance that this will be his only NFL play. It's not a 0% chance. He might not play next week. He might not play the rest of the season. There might not be another team that's real excited about picking him up at age 29 next year. There might not. And it's just one of these unfortunate situations. That's not necessarily a play he wants to show his grandkids, even though there's just nothing he could do on the play.
Yeah. It's not quite to the same degree. You know, he didn't do all the right things necessarily. It's more so a situation of there's nothing he can really do in that scenario, but that is a little interesting to think about if that truly is his last NFL play. It's got to eat at you a little bit. You play poker, yeah. Right, Ken?
Yep.
So you're very familiar with that you can make the exact right play or the exact right call and the cards can come out wrong.
Yeah.
And hopefully over time you have enough, you know, enough events that should, you know, making the right play should accrete to your benefit. It's got to be very frustrating if you had one shot to make, you know, and you make quote unquote the right play and it doesn't go your way. And just to have to sit with that is tough.
That's not unique to poker, of course.
Yeah.
You know, it, as a person who literally lives to walk through life, take risk and get paid for it, whether it's in gambling, investments, you know, in a job as an actuary, you're looking for those opportunities to do that. But yeah, I agree. It's, you know, it's frustrating anytime you lose a bet you think you have an advantage on. I always used to say there's two things, two states you can be in Las Vegas. The first is after any result, you know, is delivered, you can be pissed off because you lost, which is bad. And you can be pissed off because you didn't bet enough. Those are the two chances, really risks you have. And if you've ever been to Las Vegas, one of the things you'll notice is you'll meet more weirdos, I'm using it in air quotes, in a week in Las Vegas than you'll meet in a year at home or maybe multiple years. Even going to Ravens games, doing other things where, you know, weirdos tend to congregate. And you see people who are little outliers in terms of their personality, not necessarily in your social group, whatever. You might see them there. The reason I figured out after a reason why it's true in Las Vegas is that people are under stress. And you know how all those INTJ tests work where they're trying to judge you. And then they say, you know, under stress, he may show signs of blah, 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 get anything. Well, everybody's under stress in Las Vegas, you know, in terms of their money. So you're seeing the worst or maybe the best that they could be. And it could be very funny. Yeah. All right, let's get back to it here. So the what they did with deceptive elements I thought was interesting in this game. So we talked a little bit about all of the how he did relative to his opportunity set. But they had some off-ball blitzes in this game, 12 of them to be exact, one double. That's a lot, a 0.26 per play. And out of those 11 plays, they got 4 pressures, 4 ball out quicks, and 3 ample time and space, which I would not consider a really good payoff for it. But they did hold the Patriots to 5.7 yards per play on that. So nothing too terrible. Nothing great, nothing terrible in terms of their blitzes. The stunts, I've never seen a result like this. They stunted 10 times. They had one double, so there were 9 plays involved. They had 12.0 yards per play. They had 5 pressures among those 9 plays, and yet every single one of those passes was complete for 108 total yards. How the heck does that happen? Yeah. All right. Simulated pressures. eight of those 5.8 yards per play will go today for the net. Then they used two elements. They gave up 9.1 yards per play on seven plays. Nothing much to say about that. Probably talk a little bit about Travis Jones again in the second episode and some of the individual players, so we don't need to talk about the individual results in this. Frustrating game. Is there anything you walk away from, Spencer, and say, this is something this team could take into 2026 at least?
It's hard to find anything. I think going into the half, I was feeling like this, you know, a good offense had the makings of a good defensive performance. And just really those last two drives where they gave up the game just left such a gross taste in my mouth that it's hard to say. I think continued upward arrow from a couple guys, Travis Jones, Mike Green, a few others, is I think the one thing you can look to, but that's not necessarily new as of this game. And it's really hard to find a positive with the way the game ended.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I if I had to point to something, maybe it's that Ardarius Washington could be a player who was similar. And you know, he played well last week. I think he played pretty well again this week. Maybe he's a player who could, well, he at least should be a guy the Ravens should want to try and re-sign, I think. And if you're looking for a cheap safety, he's a cheap, very versatile defensive back who could help you in a lot of different ways and specifically help the Ravens in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, agreed. And I think he's a guy, even if he has a modest price tag, is more valuable to Baltimore than basically any other team. So that's one. And maybe we'll talk about him in a few minutes here on the maybe the other side of the break. But that I think should be able, the Ravens should be able to get a deal done.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope you're right about that. Spencer, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can contact you if they want to have a question or want to talk football with you online.
Yeah, the best place is Twitter/X at Spencer CP. And always looking to talk Ravens and, you know, Orioles season upcoming. So reach me there.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. As always, please use hashtag Film Study Mailbag when you can. We'll try and get the questions allocated to the right show. We have a lot of Harbaugh questions, obviously a lot of coaching questions coming up. We'll probably put most of those on Friday morning GM, but there will be a couple we'll address in the second half of the show in terms of the offense or the defense, I should say. We really appreciate you using that. If you've got other things, particularly if they're explanation items, you'd like me to do in a 1 to 3 minute video, please help me with that. Try and come up with something you'd like to hear a reasoning for. Spencer, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.